Chapter 41. I love ice cream, I love you. Opening questions. If people did not want to love other people, and yet at some level they know they should, would defining love as something that it is not help accomplish that? Is the purest, highest form of love an emotion towards others? If true love should be practiced and you are not practicing it, are you a good person? If people who know each other and live near each other really understand love, will they be apart or together? If a person claims that love is the most important concept that God gave to human beings, and yet that person does not practice love, what does that say about that person? Ah, now we get to the second most important aspect of the solution. It is second because you cannot know what love really is unless you use truth to do so, and we need the right leader to define love properly for us. This matter gets to the crux of the successful failure that is Christianity and the Christians who practice their religion. They are successful from the world's perspective of material abundance and influencing or controlling people, but failures from the perspective of refusing to do the most important thing that the one they call their God asks, which is to love one another. Remember how we define love in this book according to Joshua's definition instead of the world's definition. Love is the manifestation, the practical outworking of the solution. Almost everyone, if asked the question, "Are you a loving person?" will answer yes. This is so because our Creator gave us a conscience and we know that that is how we ought to be. But the fact that most people believe something about themselves does not make their claim true, does it? It is similar to asking people, "Are you a good person?" How many people will answer, "No, I'm not"? Very few, due to our self-filters and rose-colored glasses we wear, especially when looking into the mirror. But the fact, listen to the average person as they say, "Oh, I love ice cream," or "I love my dog," or "I love that TV show," or "I love pizza," or "I love that park," or "I love those shoes," or "I love that movie," etc., etc. And then they say to someone, "I love you." A little bell should ring, or a little red flag ought to go up for that person, and they ought to ask, "So what is the difference between me and the pizza," for example? Sadly, oftentimes, not much. There is no better way to destroy the meaning of a word than to broaden it or to redefine its meaning until it loses all clarity and becomes essentially meaningless. For example, the saying, "Everyone is special," nullifies the plain meaning of special and does in fact result in the belief that therefore no one person is special. And so it is with love. By the way, the "everyone is special" saying is usually misused because of the people not making the distinction between the value of a person versus their ability to do certain things. So for example, all the little girls on the soccer or football team are equally valuable as human beings, but not are all good soccer players. A few are exceptional or special soccer players. So, what love has come to mean in the general culture is, "I really like," or "that thing that really pleases me." Love has become for many merely a strong emotional liking for something and synonymous with "really like." Chapter section. It is not unloving to correct another person. Before we look at what love is, it is important to address the usually wrong concept of, quote, unloving, unquote. Many Christians wrongly believe that to be loving can include accepting what is wrong. They are like the wrongly weak mother who just knows that little Johnny is a good kid even while he bullies, threatens, and assaults other children on a regular basis. As another example, many Christians say, quote, "It is not loving to condemn homosexuals," unquote. But what they really mean by that is that the beliefs behind homosexual marriage or homosexual child raising are acceptable and right. They refuse to distinguish between individuals and principles or between wrong and right, and oftentimes because they are no longer capable due to their relativism. As another example, many Christians oppose child discipline on the basis that it's, quote, not loving towards the child, even as their child is practicing wrong behavior and or language towards other people on a regular basis, because their lack of consequences is encouraging that. The simple truth is that true love does not exist in a vacuum. It exists between people and can only be expressed while observing, acknowledging, or promoting what is right. Stated from the other side of the coin, love is not expressed by wrong behavior or by endorsing or ignoring wrong beliefs or behavior. It is very important to understand that love between two or more people cannot work or flourish if there is something false or wrong in the relationship. In conclusion, it is not unloving to correct another person's false beliefs or wrong behavior, and in fact, we need to address harmful behavior, for to ignore it is truly unloving. It is unloving to want to harm another person or to harm another person, harm being defined as physically or materially. To call the verbal correction of a person unloving for telling them that, for example, it is wrong for two men to marry is both false and very destructive. As we saw in the relativism chapters, it will be the end to all commonly held ethical beliefs. And this is, in fact, what is happening in the U.S. at this time. Chapter section. What is the standard to know what love means? To know if something is true or false, you need a standard to judge, evaluate, or measure against. For example, if I say I am over 6 feet tall and you say no, you are not, we need to agree on the length of a foot and then measure it correctly, determine who is right. So before we can determine my actual height, we need to first agree on the unit of measure, in this case, a foot of the English system. As another example, you can say, quote, Susie is a giving person, unquote. But what is the standard to determine that? Well, one would need to start by agreeing that giving means to give good things to other people, whether material or relational. Then we could talk to all the people Susie interacts with on a regular basis and ask them if Susie gives good things to them on a regular basis. If the majority said yes, then your statement is validated as true. If the majority says no, then your claim on an objective basis is wrong, even if a few individuals say, and Susie favors, disagrees. As you can see, while non-physical things like human motivations, thoughts, words, and subsequent behavior are more difficult to measure if no standard is known or agreed upon, in the example above, giving has no precise standard, it is still possible if people can agree to a standard. The really good news is that universal standards for human behavior have been given. It was given by the creator of the human race. The creator sent his messenger to tell us the rules for human motivation and behavior. For what is right versus wrong human behavior. The messenger's name is, of course, Joshua or Jesus of Nazareth. The people of the earth in general have not done very well over the millennia. Conflict, abuse of power, neglecting one another, harming one another, and the pain and suffering have been the normal order for thousands of years. Oh yes, every once in a while there is an exception, with people participating in the exception and doing much better than the norm. Those exceptions have sadly been few and far in between and relatively small in scale. As was stated previously and validated by the one who defeated death, the creator of the human race sent a messenger to mankind about 2 millennia ago, and he made it very clear what the creator wants his created race of mankind. He wants this all-important concept called love to be known and practiced by all of us. Sadly and tragically, the human race has for the most part ignored the messenger and has gone on its normal way of being bound by self-pride and fear and selfishness, thus continuing the established order of conflict, abuse of power, neglecting one another, harming one another, and the pain and suffering all those things bring. There has always been some, very few in proportion to the general population of the earth, who have listened to the Creator's messenger, or the conscience given to them by the Creator, and thus have endeavored to live by this all-important concept of love. Chapter section, what love is and is not. Let us first clarify what love is not, For many are self-deceived, thinking they are loving people because they have the wrong definition or understanding of what true love is. Love is not an emotion or feeling. While emotions and feelings can result from the expression of love, those emotions or feelings are not how Joshua defines love. This is one of the greatest errors that is currently believed by many people. Love is not a feeling of or emotional-based attraction to another person. The attraction to the other person is usually a strong self-desire to in some way have that other person, oftentimes for sexual reasons, oftentimes to try and fill an insecurity we have, sometimes for control reasons. The strong emotional desire for a person of the opposite gender is very common in the teenage years and is often called first love, while really an accurate description would be first emotional infatuation. This often has the boy or girl's insecurity as a strong factor in the infatuation. Love is not merely friendship, although the best friendships will practice love. Two people who are companions and thus good friends normally practice love in that relationship. Love is not liking another person because they affirm you or because you have similar interests and thus enjoy spending some time together. That is friendship. Love is not civility, politeness, being considerate to others, gracious, being merciful, patient, or maintaining self-control, although all of those things are good. So, if you practice those things, then you are a better person than most. But practicing those things still doesn't make you a person practicing love according to the light of the world. Here is the Christian leader's Paul's take on love. Quote, love is patient, love is kind, and is not jealous. Love does not brag and is not arrogant, does not act unbecomingly. It does not seek its own, is not provoked, does not take into account a wrong suffered, does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. Unquote. Paul says many good things about how we ought to be. He lists many good character traits or human virtues, but he also makes the terrible mistake of redefining love so broadly so as to mean several things or nothing, just like the term special example at the beginning of this article or this chapter. And thus, the pure definition of love is lost or hidden in his confusion. In other words, a person reading Paul's understanding of how love could be very patient and kind, but refuse to actually not seek their own and deceive themselves into thinking because they have two characteristics of love, they are a person of love. As another example, I can be a non-jealous person or humble person or a calm person or a forgiving person, but still be unwilling to share my life with other disciples, which is what love does. A good way to test what love is to plug the supposed things that people say love is into John 3:16, perhaps the best definitional statement of what love is from Joshua. For example, that saying of Joshua is, "For God so loved the world that he sent his only beloved Son," etc. So, to test Paul's definition of love, let's plug in a few of the many characteristics he claimed were part of love into the saying of Joshua. Quote, "For God so not jealoused the world that he sent," etc. Or, "For God so displayed patience that he sent." Or, "For God so not provoked the world that he sent." As you can see, many of the good things that Paul lists do not fit in with what is perhaps the best definitional standard that Joshua made of the all-important concept of love. Just like the Bible hides the light by burying his voice amidst many other voices, so Paul surrounds the core of love, which is, quote, "does not seek its own," unquote, with many things love is not. Thus, he provides the example, and for many, the authority, to redefine the most important concepts given by the Creator, and which concept was clearly defined by the Creator's messenger. So, let us take a brief look at this all-important concept to gain clarity on it. We must first find the authority or standard to know what love is. Since the dictionaries didn't exist at the time, and since the Model for Mankind provided the definition for love, we would do well to listen to him. In short, Joshua defines love as, quote, to value someone and have compassion for them and to behave selflessly towards them or help them and to want to be with them, unquote. Please read that again and think about it, for it is the core or the heart of the love that the light of the world teaches. Now ask yourself in a real honest way, who in your life are you practicing love towards? Here are a few important facts to consider about love. Fact 1. The light speaks to the concept of love about 60 times in the four gospel books, so it is the primary topic and concern of his. Fact 2. The light says the three greatest commandments are about love. Quote, one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" And he said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets," unquote, Matthew 22. Quote, "A new command I give to you, my disciples, that you love one another even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another," unquote, John chapter 13. Fact 3. The light affirms and clarifies the two greatest commandments and says we are to love everyone we encounter or know inasmuch as they will let us, even those who make themselves, quote, our enemies. In contrast, Moses and thus the Hebrew scripture teaches hate and kill your enemies. Quote, "You shall not hate your fellow countrymen in your heart," unquote. That's Leviticus 19. And, quote, "Take full vengeance for the sons of Israel on the Midianites, not your fellow countrymen. Now, therefore, kill every boy and male child and kill every woman who is not a virgin," unquote, Numbers 31. Therefore, you make a great error if you try to understand God through the Hebrew scripture. Fact 4. The new command is not negotiable, nor would someone want it to be if they had a heart to receive it. For the disciples' love for one another will be the only way for, quote, all men to know that we are followers of the life. And yes, love will be seen by other people as we live together in unity and peace and care for each other and do the Master's work. Fact 5. The light says that if those who say they follow him do not live love out, then they do not in reality represent him. So if you claim to be some kind of follower of Jesus Christ and you are not sharing your life, really his life, with them, that is living with other followers as actual brothers and sisters and truly good friends, then you are deceived and living a religious lie that will only serve as self-condemnation. Fact 6. The light says that there is no greater love that can be exhibited than to lay down our lives for our friends. So, if we are unwilling to live for and with our friends, what would make us think we would be willing to die for them other than the delusion self-pride would generate? If you can accede to the above truths about love, and you want to live by love, and you can see that you are not or have not been living by love, then you are on the brink of a very different life than the one you have been living. A simple truth is that the manifestations of love cannot be realized by one person willing to live by love. It takes at least two people who are willing to love each other for the manifestations of that love Joshua talks about to exist. Furthermore, if you claim to be a disciple of Joshua, the new command cannot be lived out among merely blood or legal relatives, nor can it be lived out amongst a religious group of people who do not actually love each other as Joshua defines it. It is important to note, before we take a closer look at love, that love does not exist in isolation of other important aspects of human life, or stated another way, love exists within or is subservient to only one constraint, truth. We could not even know what love is without truth, because using reason and logic to know truth is how we understand what metaphysical things are. In short, we cannot be practicing something wrong against another person and actually love them. Joshua teaches those words and writes clearly, but if we are living by love, we really won't need to refrain from the wrong, since we will naturally be doing what is right. Said another way, love causes us to do what is right without having to concern ourselves with abstaining from what is wrong. Love is active and reaching out where others focused. What can I do to help that person? Whereas rule or law is passive and preventative and self-focused. What will happen to me if I do that wrong thing? The Creator has given human beings the metaphysical aspect of our nature called a conscience. The conscience is the rule or law of knowing wrong behavior programmed into our nature. It informs us when we are thinking about doing something wrong or actually doing something wrong or after we do something wrong. But our conscience does not motivate us to love. Something more is required for that. The conscience is largely reactive, not proactive. For people of faith, we must first experience our Father's love for us as expressed through His Son. Chapter Section: Manifestations of Those Living by Love. Here are some characteristics or manifestations of people who are living by the love that Joshua of Nazareth teaches. Manifestations of those actually living out the new command. We are together, not apart. Love brings people together. It does not separate them or drive them apart. To follow the light and live by His love will lead to being in one of His families. Thus, if we are living alone or only living with our other natural family members, the easiest way for Christians to deceive themselves and avoid trying to live out the new command, then we are not loving well, or perhaps not at all, and we are certainly not living out Joshua's new command. We are not afraid to discuss important things with others due to the love we receive from our Father. We are secure in Him, therefore not ruled by fear, and in what we believe because we have placed our faith in His Son as our teacher, and He says He is all the truth that really matters. We point others to the ones, our Father and our Master, who gave us this love, showed us this love, and empower us with love, because we want them to experience them too, and we want them to experience life everlasting instead of destroying themselves for the worthless things of the world. We reach out to others to try and get them to see how special this faith-given love is and to participate in it, for we know that it is the solution to all mankind's problems. Most Christians, when they hear these simple truths, respond with self-pride or fear or say something like, "Oh, what are you saying, that we need to be part of a commune, that we need to be part of a cult, that we need to live like socialists, groupies, or hippies, etc., etc., or a myriad of other fear-based defensive responses?" My response is, no, I am just repeating what Joshua of Nazareth teaches. Or they will say, "Show me a verse in the Bible that supports your view of love." And I quote Acts 2, 44 and 45, quote, "And all those who had believed were together and had all things in common, and they began selling their property and possessions and were sharing them all, as anyone might have need," unquote. But those who don't have ears to hear and who don't want to live by love will not listen even to their beloved Bible if it says something they don't want to hear, and will find every excuse or theological trick to make the words of no effect. Those who fight against this simple truth and His definition of love are those where the seed falls on the bad soil, where holding on to this world and their lives in this world have domination over listening to the light and His way of love, despite the life saying, quote, "For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it," unquote, Matthew chapter 16. Dear listener, if you are looking to save or preserve your life in this world, then you will lose eternal life, which is real life. Chapter Section: A Word to Non-Theists and Agnostics About Love. This author believes that love was given by the Creator, and thus he knows what it means and how important it is. The Creator's messenger affirmed just that. We who listen to the light have the privilege of knowing what love is and have a real opportunity to live love out amongst others who are not in a destructive mode due to being trapped in a cage of self-pride and fear and selfishness. If you cannot properly define love, you cannot understand it. And if you cannot understand love, you have very little chance of living it or practicing it. Most people don't know what love is. Many can recognize it when they see it in action, but it is like a mysterious firework that burns in front of them for a brief moment and then is gone. The conscience God gave all people enables the recognition of true love, but not the understanding. If we are in a cage of self-pride and fear and selfishness, we cannot know, understand, nor practice true love well, if at all. We need the light to give us understanding about true love. In fact, the apex of the light story was the strongest manifestation of true love the people of the earth have had an opportunity to witness. He was forsaken by friends, mocked, beaten, tortured, and then publicly nailed to a cross, all wrongfully. He did not deserve that treatment. It was entirely and thoroughly unjust. And yet at the end of all that wrong treatment, he said to the men doing that to him, quote, "Father, forgive them because they don't know what they're doing," unquote. That, dear reader, is true love. That is the expression of compassion without bounds. It is arguably the greatest example of selflessness ever expressed. He did not care about what was happening to him. Rather, he cared about the fate of those men who were, at that time, his enemies and thus were set on a course of self-destruction. As the expression of the Creator, the light did not want them to destroy themselves. In that moment, Joshua of Nazareth consummated all his teachings on what true love was all about. He demonstrated the teaching that could change humankind's course. Quote, "Love your enemies," or "Love those who choose to make themselves your enemies." This author argues that until a person can contemplate what the light did and the love the Father Creator demonstrated to all people through his Son, we cannot know true love at its deepest level. Furthermore, unless we experience the Father's love, receiving his compassionate forgiveness for all our wrongdoings, we don't have much of a chance of living true love out. Atheists and agnostics will normally vehemently agree with those statements. I ask in return, what is your common standard to know what true love is? In other words, if I poll 1,000 agnostics, for example, and ask, what is love? I think it is fair to say that you will get many different answers, and the most popular will be some version of, it is how I feel for certain people. In fact, most of the 7 billion human beings currently on the earth would not get that right no matter what labels they take for themselves. Obviously, truly loving other people is not easy. That is part of the reason why it is so valuable, since it is not consistently practiced. Furthermore, I ask in return to non-theists and agnostics, what is your motivation for living true love out? True love gives, it does not take. True love suffers without complaining and looks to help those who cause the suffering. A more anti-evolutionary view you will not find. A stronger antonym to the survival of the fittest doctrine is hard to imagine. Animals don't help their competitors. Animals don't sacrifice themselves to protect the weak. And no, dear reader, finding a few exceptions to the general truths I just stated does not nullify the truths I just stated. Remember your logical fallacies. Finally, and as is stated earlier in the book, when a person truly loves other people, that spiritual connection for those who return true love is very strong. True love expressed and understood between two people is arguably the most valuable experience this life can provide. The Creator did not set things up so that the most valuable things human beings can experience in this life will be destroyed upon death. In fact, that is one of the aspects of hope that the light provides us. If we are willing to truly love other people, that love and relationship will be preserved and made more beautiful and real post-physical death. What about those people who don't believe in life after death? If you are a parent who loves your child, the last thing you want is to lose your child. If you lose them, it would cause a whole lot of suffering. The pain of heartbreak is real and is worse than physical pain, yet another proof of the metaphysical or spiritual reality we exist in. For the few left who truly love their spouses, the thought of being without them is very painful. The fact that many older people who lose spouses they love through physical death give up on life and die shortly thereafter. Many people labor under the falsehood that physicalists put forth that when we die, we cease to exist. That is one way to view reality, and I would say a horribly inferior or deficient way, and denying some very important facts. Those who truly love one another person will not want to leave them, will not want to see them destroyed, annihilated. And yet, this is the belief that non-theists labor under, and surely only selfishness enables them to, quote, move on. The really good news is that followers of the light have a person who defeated death, who says, quote, he who lives and believes in me, places their faith in me, will never spiritually die, unquote. How much is that worth? You don't have to labor under the falsehood and hopelessness that you are nothing more than molecules and that you will be annihilated when you physically die. Of course, physicalists will say that view is delusional. They say this despite the clear evidence and proof of a designer and of a spiritual metaphysical component to human nature and reality. I would counter that physicalism is delusional, just as delusional as a person insisting that computers and their functioning is merely a function of hardware. They say the disciples' view is delusional despite four corroborating books, which books document the life of a very special person, a materially poor, politically unconnected, religiously offensive, misunderstood man who changed the lives of countless individuals for better by his words and deeds. I digress a bit. Many non-theists and agnostics will say that because we are annihilated when we physically die, we are more motivated to love in this life. I don't think there is any evidence of that. What I know and experience is that people are somewhat delusional about death. They're basically in denial about death for their entire life. I understand this because most people believe that their existence will end upon physical death, so they push it off and understandably refuse to truly contemplate it. Therefore, to believe that the average person lives their life consciously aware of their death is unreasonable and not supported by evidence. What I have experienced and what I have observed is that human nature is basically selfish, and therefore if the average person believes their life is going to end in, say, the next week, it will not necessarily motivate them to all of a sudden live selflessly. Rather, it is likely to bring additional fear and anxiety and the desire to experience the few things they value highest in this life and in this world. Ultimately, I posit that those who believe that we are annihilated upon physical death will not likely love as frequently and cannot love as deeply as those who know we will not lose the love we expressed in this life. The simple truth is that those who know we are heading home to a Father who loves us and that we will continue to experience the love we experience while on the earth are empowered to love, to give, to be selfless and live for what is truly valuable. Those who believe their physical life on this earth is all they will experience and are not likely to give their lives away in love for others. Chapter section. Back to the Christians. If you continue on in all the self-delusions about how you are a person of God's love when you are not, you are destroying yourself and forfeiting life. If you think you can live the selfish, independent, proud American way, the way of this is mine and that is yours and you stay over there except when it's convenient for us to get together for a few meetings, then you are on the broad way of destruction. If you think attending a religious service is somehow fulfilling a life of love, you are badly deceived and are both working against the light and are very much part of the problem. If you are a Christian or Biblian who thinks having some ideology that is different than the mainstream or that not being part of the obviously dead Christian system is noble, yet you are not living out the new command, you too are badly deceived and falling short. Quote, there is no greater love than this, that we lay down our lives for our friends, unquote. Lay down our life means die for our friend. I say again, if we are not willing to live with our friends and help them and care for them each day, then what makes us think we will die for them other than the delusion produced by self-pride? Here come the lame excuses. Oh, I would, but my religious leader says, but my wife, but my parents, but my husband, but my job, but my children, but my situation, but I have this problem, but my career, but my work, and on the lovelessness grows and goes, growing colder and colder as each year passes. For the record, none of those excuses will bring life, nor will they prevent you from sending yourself to destruction. But then that is the nature of delusion and deception, isn't it? Quote, the love of most will grow cold, but he who endures continues by faith to love to the end, even when love has been redefined and the people grow content in their selfish materialistic lifestyle, will be saved from the emptiness and self-condemnation and destruction that faithlessness and lovelessness brings. Unquote. Following the leader and his teachings on love in a context of truth and rightness is the meat of the solution, dear reader, dear listener. So, what do we do about the truth and rightness framework of understanding? Or stated another way, what are the fundamental realities we must agree on in order to be the city on a hill the light speaks of, in order to be a unified people? We'll look at that in the next chapter. Chapter summary. The most important concept of love has been redefined into many things, thus destroying any objective understanding of the concept. Without the right understanding of the concept, who can practice it or encourage others to practice it? The world does not practice love and has largely redefined or reduced love to emotions associated with particular circumstances or feelings for others, usually romantic in nature or wanting another person, often for selfish reasons. The Creator's messenger defines the core of love as selfless behavior motivated by compassion and valuing others at least as much as we value ourselves. When we practice love or see it practiced, we are normally blessed by our emotions validating that practice. Those who understand love and who want to practice love will live with others of the same understanding. Love will bring people together and have them share life together. Disciples of the light must live out the new command if there is any chance of having an impact on the increasingly cold and dark world we live in this age of darkness.